Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again!
Gavin keeps it. Skill on goal, look at that pass! Hey, look! Goal, Columbus!
There are things on here for the USA. Can they do it here? Cross, and Dempsey's denied again! But Donovan has scored! Can you believe this? Go, go, USA!
This is the beautiful game.
Oh, it's incredible!
Described by two uglies.
Stupendous!
Welcome to Bone and Beam United.
This is a thing of genius.
Happy Soccer Podcast Day. What is up? I am Bone.
And I am Beam.
Oh, man, do we have a fun show today. So we're going to get into some talk. Manchester United has a new head coach for now, so we'll talk about that. We will talk about the Ballon d'Or and some controversy with the award for the best footballer in the world. An old guy and a young guy talk about eating food, and it turned out to be hilarious. But beyond all that, the crew made some moves. We've got MLS Cup playoffs going on. We know of a guy who is a huge crew fan named Neighbor Eric.
Yeah.
Who we talk about all the time on the show. Obviously, Beamer knows him. It's his neighbor. That's why we call him Neighbor Eric. But we thought, let's have Neighbor Eric on the show to talk about MLS playoffs. The conference finals are this weekend. You and I aren't watching one scintilla of MLS soccer since
word
the
crew of the day, scintilla. Way to throw that in my face.
Just doing
start
what
using
I can.
Words I don't know, then we're going to have a problem.
So I don't even know. I have to actually go look before we talk to him. I don't remember who's in. I have no idea.
I know the Revs are out. I know New England is out.
Yeah, Revs are out. Did New York beat them?
Yes.
Okay. And then, all right. West, I have no idea in the West. So we're going to learn that together, and we're going to talk with Neighbor Eric. So if you want to actually know what's going on and maybe check out some MLS Cup playoff action this weekend, you will have a little bit of insight.
Because he's watching.
Happen.
He's watching.
Oh, he loves it. He loves it so much, and I can't wait to talk to him because I've never actually met him.
The thing I will preface this to you about that before we talk to Neighbor Eric is that he is a diehard MLS fan. He loves the crew. He is not very much into European soccer. His favorite team is Everton because all of his friends are Liverpool fans, which I admire 1,000% about him. He knows nothing about American football. He calls it armball. He hates it. I will ask him a question about, you know, perhaps some coaches here at Ohio State, and you'll see the lack of knowledge that he has about American football. I mean, when I tell you that he is one of the most just amazing individuals and just a creative specimen, you are going to fall in love with him. I mean, it's shocking.
All right, so we'll talk to Neighbor Eric coming up in just a little bit. But first, let's start with the Ballon d'Or, the trophy for the Footballer of the Year in world soccer. This year it went again to Lionel Messi. That makes 7 awards.
Pretty good.
The best player in the world ever. Now, I said this was controversial, and there are reasons for that. Robert Lewandowski also had a great year. Cristiano Ronaldo, of course, also had a great year. All these guys have a claim to the throne, but last year, Robert Lewandowski was the best player in soccer. I think we could all agree on that. I mean, he had a monster year, and that was during pandemic time and everything else, but he was still awesome. And they decided not to give out the award last year because of it being pandemic and weird and other things. So the group that actually gives the award out, that is it's France Football. They're the ones who do that. They're a publication that has been awarding that award since 1956. So, you know, in a way, I mean, I guess it's like the Heisman, that there's like this group that just everyone has said, that's the award you care about.
Neighbor Eric has no clue what the Heisman is, by the way. So
I can't wait. This is going to be so good. So where do you come down on this, Beamer? Because Lionel Messi, I'm of two minds here. If you go to the NBA, which I'm sure this is also a reference that Neighbor Eric won't get. If you go to the NBA and you say, is LeBron James the best player in the NBA? There's a lot of reasons why you could probably say yes to that, because of his body of work, his knowledge, his ability in a moment to make a play has got to be up there with anyone who's ever played the game. But this year, today, right now, this moment, you're telling me there's not one athlete in the NBA who's more on their game right now? I mean, there has to be. There are. I can think of three or four guys that are playing at a better level than LeBron when he's healthy. And, of course, he's out now because of, you know, sickness. But the point being, Messi is that guy in soccer.
Yes.
Where he is, he's going to go down as perhaps the greatest player to ever play soccer in the world. That's incredible. So, sure, on a given day or in a given year, he's the best player in the world from history and legacy and knowledge and ability to do something and jaw-dropping, all that. But this is not an award about who's just kind of the best guy still doing this from a historic standpoint. It's who had the best year last year, and that was Robert Lewandowski in my mind.
Yeah, me too, man. I mean, it was stunning, right? I mean, it was just shocking how Robert Lewandowski doesn't get this. But again, I mean, Messi, good season, right? Good season, good year. We know that. I really think what spurned Lionel Messi onto winning this award this year was the fact that Argentina won Copa. I really do. I mean, first international trophy that he has won. They have been on the doorstep of that for such a long time. You look at Robert Lewandowski's stats. Again, France football not handing out the Ballon d'Or because of the weird COVID year last year. Robert Lewandowski last year for Bayern Munich, again, in the year which they did not give it away. So, in my opinion, right, you should have crammed 2-1. Who was the best soccer player in the world over the last 2 years, okay? I don't know if that's legal. I don't know if they were judging it on it. Obviously, they weren't. Robert Lewandowski last year, just in just games for Bayern, let alone taking out what he did for Poland and his international team. He played 59 matches for Bayern Munich last year. He had 63 goals, okay? Pretty good. Oh, yeah, God. Pretty good, okay? Guy Robert Lewandowski is the best striker on planet Earth right now. He also had 12 assists. This year, so far in the 2021 campaign for Bayern Munich, he has played in 46 games, has 51 goals, and also has 10 assists. You tell me how that guy's not the best player on planet Earth, and I'll show you a liar. Again, Lionel Messi, very good, deserving of 6 Ballon d'Ors and everything that he has done, and we have seen him and Cristiano go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Robert Lewandowski got hosed, man. It's very upsetting to see.
Yeah, well, and if you go back to that 2020 season where they didn't give it out, right, they won Champions League in, you know, the spring of that year, right? So, like, Lewandowski won a Champions League title and then has gone on and done all these other things too. I'm with you. They should have looked at the last 2 years combined and said, who's the best? And let's make up for that with a kind of an award here if we're not going to give out the one from last year.
Bone, he's got 9 goals in Champions League this year in 5 matches.
Well, and here's the other thing to keep in mind, because they obviously have to submit these votes. They didn't just, you know, vote the day before and then hand in the ballots and the next day they have a trophy ceremony. I mean, they had to vote at some point a little earlier in the year, but here are the stats compared from all the Ballon d'Or front runners when the vote at the date where the votes were due, right? So we're going to wait till the last minute. Here are the numbers that were amassed. Robert Lewandowski, this is, I believe, all competitions, not just club soccer. This is playing for Poland. This is everything. Lewandowski, 54 games, 64 goals, 9 assists, won the Bundesliga and the DFL Super Cup. Okay. Messi, 56 games, 41 goals.
Very good.
Very good. 41 goals and 17 assists. And then, of course, that Copa del Rey and Copa America, which are big deals as well. Cristiano Ronaldo, who also had a little snarky comment on his Instagram.
What isn't snarky about him?
43 goals, 6 assists, and they won Coppa Italia when he was with Juventus. Karim Benzema had 58 games, 43 goals, 13 assists. Mo Salah, 53 games, 34 goals, 10 assists. Erling Haaland, 46 games, 44 goals,
he finished 11th, didn't he? He finished outside of the top 10.
Mo Salah finished 7th. Like, now, again, I realize all these names I'm giving you are guys who are primarily scoring threats. And that's where I get really ticked off with this award is if we're going to say, because they did give Robert Lewandowski, FIFA, this same group, this Football France, they created a Striker of the Year award and gave that to Lewandowski. And I guess that's their way of saying, we should have given you something last year. I don't know if we're going to give it to you this year, but here's this other award. You're definitely the Striker of the Year, regardless of if you're anything else.
Good job, Robert.
But the Ballon d'Or has become that, has it not? Like, it kind of is like, who's the offensive-minded player who scores the most goals and is the most, like, dominant force offensively?
Yeah, because right? A couple of seasons ago, Virgil van Dijk finished second, all right? So Virgil finished second in the Ballon d'Or.
And he should have won it.
He should have won it. He was the best player, the most impactful player in the game of soccer on the world landscape. You could tell. He came to Liverpool. What did they do? They won Champions League. What did they do the year after that? They won the league for the first time in 100 years. Like, okay, he should have won that. I don't know, man. Listen, you made this argument, and I'm the same way. Lionel Messi will go down as a footballing god, okay? He is one of the best players to ever grace the earth, and what he possesses and the skills that he has and the goal scoring capability, you know, with his left foot and the magic that he possesses. If you're looking at this from an actual stat-based standpoint and who impacts the game greater today, the question isn't even close. The answer is Robert Lewandowski 10 times out of 10.
Yeah. And I this is saying nothing bad about any of those other guys. It's just, why do you even have this award then? If it's just going to be, well, we know that Lionel Messi's one of the greatest players. By that logic, then LeBron should have been named MVP every year since 2004, right? I mean, or Tom Brady should be the MVP every year in the NFL. And again, neighbor Eric warning, those are names that you might have to Google. I'm just saying, like.
And Patrick Mahoney, his guy.
All I'm saying is, man, like, the award's supposed to be for who's having the best season, even if they're not the best player on planet Earth. And whether or not that's the intent of the award, that's what it's become. And yet it usually boils down to who's scoring the most goals. If you want to go that route too, Lewandowski, 64 goals scored. You can add up Messi's assists and goals, and he doesn't have the same number of goals created, let alone Lewandowski also having 9 assists. Like, that's insanity to me, that the season that he put together, and that's, I'm telling you about Lewandowski's 2021. Those are the numbers from this current year.
Let alone the one that he didn't win last year, because they didn't have the award.
There's a travesty of 2 years, and Messi even acknowledged this. He said, I think you deserve your Ballon d'Or. Last year, everyone was in agreement you were the winner, and I think France football should give you that award.
But this year, don't worry about this year.
Yeah.
This is mine.
He said this during his acceptance speech where he's like, I feel kind of crappy. Zlatan had a quote, said, Leo lives for football, but Lewandowski deserved the award this year. Alfonso Davies said, to me, it doesn't make a lot of sense. If I start talking about it, a lot of people's feelings are going to get hurt. At least give Lewandowski his award from last year. And Thomas Muller said,
This is the one too. I'll react to this quote because I saw this yesterday come down and I had an immediate reaction.
Well, he said it. I mean, I don't have the exact quote, but it was more or less, this adds motivation for us to go out and prove everyone wrong.
He said, what happened at the Ballon d'Or ceremony was disappointing, similar to Ribéry in 2013.
Yes.
But this gives us more motivation to win this season's Champions League and prove to the world what German football is capable of. And we will prove that starting with our next match against Barcelona. Every dollar that you have, I'm not a betting expert, don't listen to me. Every dollar that you have, every cryptocurrency asset, every NFT, every piece of real estate that you have, put it on Bayern Munich to win the Champions League. Put it on Bayern Munich. Thomas Müller's a ride or die. I love him so much. And I feel like this team, if they needed any bit more motivation to win this year, it's going to happen.
There's a thing with him, at least. I don't want to extend this to like all of German soccer, but I definitely feel like he has been representative of a very significant portion of German soccer over the years. Thomas Müller strikes me as a guy, and you get this somewhat to, there's a lot of people around world football who like this, but he has this attitude where I could see him sitting in a cafe and going, well, there are some years where you are just not the best team. But then like 1 year, he's just like, this is the year where we will win. Like, we have to. Like, there's like, I could just see him getting into a mindset of like, no, we had a couple years where we did not win. We will win now. Like, not saying it in a braggadocious way of just
matter of fact.
This is a certainty. We will now go and win. Like, because we're setting our minds to it. He seems pragmatic enough to understand you can't win it every year. But damn it, when you want to win it, you can go win it.
This is also a guy, too, who got... Remember Dante, the old defender for Bayern Munich?
Yeah.
When Germany beat them in the World Cup, Brazil, 7-1, apparently he wouldn't stop ragging on Dante so much about that 7-1 victory that Dante demanded a transfer to get out because Thomas Müller was such a pain in his ass. So if that's any kind of motivation for him, then watch out.
Oh, absolutely right. I would not want to be on the opposite side of a motivated Thomas Muller-led team.
No, thanks.
Nope. Even if he's not the guy he was, I mean, I want no part of that. All right, so let's talk about a couple other things real quick, and then we'll get to neighbor Eric. So Manchester United has a new interim boss, Ralph Rangnick,
yep,
I believe. Is
correct.
That how we're supposed to say that? Okay. Takes over there. Your thoughts on that move?
Yeah, excited to see it. Soccer podcasting day today. They play Arsenal, United in 10th, Arsenal in 5th. He just got his work visa approved. He will be in the stands later today. If you're listening on soccer podcasting day, he's not going to be taking over just yet. I would imagine that comes later on this weekend. Michael Carrick's still in charge for it right now. So the thing you have to know about Ralph Rangnick, if you're a Manchester United fan, The Athletic actually did a fantastic article and about a 20-minute video about the tactics that he's going to employ. So basically just saying, like, hey man, Manchester United was designed to be a pressing team. We talked about that, what, a couple of weeks ago, last week, whatever, buying into the press, getting the press. And so he is known as one of the best pressing managers around world soccer. And I'm going to be interested to see how they employ that. What are the new strategies they're going to bring? I think this is still a bridge gap, right? I mean, he is an interim manager. If he wins some games, will United go down the Ole road and sign him to a permanent deal? I don't think so. It still looks to be like Erik ten Hag is catching a lot of this fire for Manchester United. So we'll see what happens later in the summer. But I love this appointment. I think this is a guy who you'll see. They play, I think, 5 matches before Christmas as well in the Premier League. So there's a lot of matches here coming up in a very short amount of time. I would not be surprised with the implemented style that he plays, Bone, and the way that he employs that for his guys, for United to be a top 4 team by Christmas. So that would not be surprising to me.
Wow, yeah. That's high praise. And he has been, I mean, for those who are not familiar with his career, known for influencing, among others, Thomas Tuchel and Jurgen Klopp,
yeah,
said to be kind of, I don't know if you want to say
of
disciples
mold
of his,
yeah,
but like he's been managing teams in world soccer since the early 80s. So, I mean, this is a guy who's seen a lot, been a lot. Most of the teams he's managed have been in Germany. But still, like, I mean, he has been a very influential manager, an executive in soccer, also as a former player. So, yeah, just the whole point being that this guy definitely has a lot of credibility when he comes into the locker room. Will that translate into wins? You seem to think so.
I think so. At least in the short
probably,
term. Yeah.
Yeah, in the short term, he's going to get them organized. They're going to play, not that Ole didn't have them organized.
Ole's style was literally just go out there and play.
Well, I know, but he's going to get the maximized effort out of that team, I would think. And then it may be something where, yes, at the end of the year, they say this was good, but now we want to go hire a culture guy, mm-hmm, that's more than just this X's and O's brilliant man. We want to get something a little bit more that we can market, if that's the right term for it. So who knows? We'll see. But yeah, that's a very interesting hire. I'm curious to see how it works out. I like that you're very high on it, though. I'm interested to watch that.
Yep, that'll turn in about 2 weeks' time, probably.
Oh,
so
look at that.
Mm-hmm. Snip, snap, snip, snap.
Like it. And then finally, before we get to neighbor Eric, we had to bring this up because there's a little thing on Amazon, this behind-the-scenes look at Juventus.
Yeah, the all or nothing, right, with Juventus. I haven't watched it yet, but I need to get on that.
Well, there's a clip from it that's making the rounds that I know I didn't see it yet, but you told me it was really funny.
I mean, it's amazing. So Weston McKennie, right, American guy, is obviously over there at Juventus right now. So he's sitting at a table, and I don't know if they're getting ready for a match. I don't know if they're getting ready for training, if they're coming off, whatever. But they're sitting there, and they're eating just their pregame meal or pre-match meal or whatever. So Weston McKennie, if you're familiar with anything that we do here in the States, right, like if you have kids or, you know, whatever, he's sitting down at the table and they have like pasta or pizza or salads or whatever you want to eat. And Weston McKennie's like, yeah, usually in America, like we have like burgers and brownies and everything to get ready for this. And Giorgio Chiellini, one of the greatest Italian defenders of all time, is literally sitting across from him, just staring Weston McKennie dead in the eye. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then, of course, Chiellini's literally sitting there like, yeah, all we eat here is pasta. And he's doing it in a brilliant Italian accent. I'm not going to be condescending and doing it. But he's saying to him, he's like, yeah, all we do is a little olive oil on the pasta. He's, you know, it's all you really need. And Weston McKennie is like, oh, yeah, I can get behind that, too. And then Chiellini also asks him, like, yeah, do you like pizza? He's like, yeah, of course I like pizza. Weston McKennie then fires back and goes, do you ever try ranch dressing? And Giorgio Chiellini looked like him, like he was an alien from outer space. Like, I have no idea what in the F Italian dressing is. And then Weston's describing it like, it's this white sauce. We kind of put it on everything. And Chiellini then goes, American dressing scares the shit out of me. Like, I don't know what you guys are putting on anything. I literally just put olive oil on there. And then he goes, yeah, do you like Italian coffee? Do you like espresso? Weston McKennie said, I can't drink it. Makes me shit my pants. So, I mean, it literally was amazing. The interaction. Go find it, the clip. I think it was on No Context Juve or something like that on Twitter. I wish we had capabilities to play sound here, but we obviously don't because we work at a full-fledged radio station. We're unable to do that here in the studio. But that's regardless of it. It's a fantastic video. Welcome to Italy, Weston McKennie. Don't try to bring ranch dressing in the building.
So a couple other quick facts real quick from for Giorgio Chiellini. Number one, I always thought he was like a pretty big guy. And a pretty tall player, and this is just a fun thing from soccer. He's 6'2".
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I think, like, Cristiano Ronaldo looks like a giant sometimes out there, rising up above everybody, and it's like, he's 6'1".
Yeah,
like,
I'm 6'2".
Right, yeah, I mean, and you're a tall guy, but I'm just saying, like, it's the opposite of the NBA effect, where it's like, look at that tiny little dude, and it's like, oh, he's 6'4".
Yeah.
And you're like, what?
Chris Holtmann actually bigger than I am.
Chris Holtmann is a tall guy, the Ohio State basketball coach. But here's the other thing I didn't realize, and I can't believe I didn't know this, because then I was thinking, well, how old is Chiellini anyway these days? He's 37 years old. Number one, I'm older than him, which is depressing. But he is born on the same day I was. We share a birthday.
All right.
Me and Chiellini, 2 years apart, August 14th.
Happy very belated birthday.
Thank you very much. That's what I was looking for. Now I know, though. I can celebrate with Chiellini. Every year I need to remember to have some pasta and... You know, something.
Just olive oil. No sauce.
Yeah, pasta and olive oil. Right. In honor of Chiellini and I sharing a birthday. Or maybe for his birthday, he actually eats like a real human. I don't know. And eats like, I don't know, like cake or something. Because mm-hmm. I assume all these guys who play soccer just don't eat anything normal. They have to constantly cutting fat and all that stuff. All right. We'll take a break. We come back. The long-awaited debut of Neighbor Eric. It's next on Bone and Beam United. Welcome back to Bone and Beam United. So it's been a long time coming. We've wanted to talk to this guy for a while. He's been mentioned often on this podcast, but today of all days, we have conference finals coming up soon, this weekend, in fact, for MLS. And most of the Crew fans that I know have given up on watching MLS because the Crew aren't in the playoffs. But
me and you included, both of us.
Beam's not watching it. I'm not watching it. But this guy is... Please welcome Brandon Beam's neighbor Eric, is making his debut on the podcast. Welcome, neighbor Eric. How are you?
Hey, Bone. It's so good to talk to you. Hello, Brandon. It's weird to talk to you on the phone. I don't think I've ever talked to either one of you on the phone, but I've talked to Brandon many a times because, as the listeners know, I am the neighbor of Mr. Brandon Beam.
I mean, it's pretty amazing, too. So, you know, give the people not a little, you know, just inside our neighborhood, right? So we live right next door to each other. You blow your leaves into my yard, so you're lazy enough where you don't actually have to pick them up and take them out of the street. You just use your leaf blower and you blow them all into mine. When I moved in, it's probably the thing that you were nervous about too, Eric, right? Like a shared driveway. I hope these people are very nice. And, I mean, it was pretty amazing, man. When we moved in together, obviously became fast friends. You listened to the podcast even before I moved in with my wife, and here we are, man. Great friends. Just tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, I know that, you know, you're down in Bone and Beam United folklore, of course, for being the neighbor and always bringing the excitement. But your history with soccer and the Crew, because you are the most diehard Crew fan I know.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I'll start. It's another thing that happened when we met. We also met at a weird time. It was the beginning of the pandemic. It was the time when a lot of our lives were changing. So it was great to have someone right next door that understood soccer and someone to chat with while everyone was locked inside their houses. And I guess I can say I've been a Crew fan for a while, and it started probably in 2006. Me and my brother used to park near campus and walk across the railroad tracks illegally and get into the games for a very cheap cheap price. And, of course, 2008 was a mega year when the Nordic was formed in a corner, to the mini playoffs, the MLS Cup experience in 2008, and the one we just had. And even when I met Brandon, the funny thing, too, is I didn't know who Brandon was because I knew who T-Bone was, because I've been following T-Bone's career forever because, I mean, crew fans will know this, before 2008, I mean, getting news media was such a challenge. I mean, you were on Big Soccer where you were getting, oh my gosh, verbally assaulted every day.
Oh, neighbor Eric, were you on Big Soccer too? We probably went back and forth on something at some point. This is so good to know. or we both agreed on something and we're high-fiving in like very nerdy ways online. God, for people who don't, Beamer, you don't know Big Soccer,
I don't think
at all, but you're right, Eric. That was the spot to go to where there weren't a lot of podcasts or anything about the crew, so it was just you went there. That was your community. As dumb and weird as that is, there was the phrase Applebee's waitress that used to come up. Are you familiar with that term, Eric?
No, I'm not familiar with that one. What is that?
The Applebee's waitress was somebody on Big Soccer one time was like, I heard so-and-so's coming to the crew. My waitress at Applebee's mentioned that her brother played soccer and knows this guy, and he said he, and so then that became like a thing where it would just be like, you know, anytime a player was rumored to be coming, it was like, has anyone checked with the Applebee's waitress? Does she have any info? So there's just like there, so if you weren't there that one, I don't know, 10-hour period where that germinated, then for like years after it would just be like, Applebee's waitress is on it, she'll let us know, and you wouldn't even know what that means. But that was the type of weird, goofy community that Big Soccer was, and I'm assuming still is.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's been a while since I've been on Big Soccer. I do remember that term now, but yeah, it was an interesting place. So even when T-Bone started, well, the Massive Report, that was like such a big change in crew culture. Like, it was the first time ever I could go somewhere and listen to crew content specifically about the crew. So just even how you started your, I don't know, podcasting career, I'm assuming that's where it came from. And then when you moved to the big radio station, it was a big deal for crew fans because we never really had someone representing the Columbus crew the way you did in the Massive Report and then moving into the radio.
Must be nice to be T-Bone.
Hey, I was going to say must be nice to have mature trees on your lot because you guys are talking about having leaves.
We passed
all that a long time ago. But no, and I will say I didn't start Massive Report. That was Bob Stein and Patrick Golden and Chris Lamaki, a bunch of other guys, Sam Fahmy. Those guys all started it and then graciously invited me to be a part of it. But yeah, then I did push them to start a podcast because I said, guys, we need to do this. Beam, am I still like annoying about podcasts? Because I still bring it up all the time at the station that we need to do more with podcasting. So
I mean, you're just annoying in general, but that's true. It's just part of one of your quirks. You know?
Well, Eric, I had no idea you were like a way back crew fan. So
you know what my favorite part about Eric too is, by the way, before you ask your question, is that Eric is one of the rare people in Columbus that knows nothing about Ohio State football. Like, cheers for him to do well every weekend. And when we first started, you know, talking, Eric, you were like, yeah, I mean, is that Tressman guy still the head coach? And I'm like, Jim Tressel? No, he's been gone for like a decade. So, I mean, it's amazing because you are a super fan of MLS and the crew, but you are in that like rare air 1% who has no idea what's going on with the local football team here in Columbus. And you're also a diehard Jackets fan. So your sports fandom is so interesting to me.
That is interesting. Yeah, so the Jackets, I love hockey, I love soccer, but it's football, the throwing kind, that I don't take much of it. So when you guys do these analogies about some Mahoney guy, I'm like, who the hell is Mahoney and why do I care about this man? Or Michigan Football Club, or what do they call them, football team, isn't doing well. And, oh, my God, is that really a thing? Did they win a championship ever? I have no clue. So, yes, that is a rarity for me and having conversation.
It would be, you know what, like they always talk about, because Ohio State, Eric, they have this thing called Real Life Wednesdays, or they used to have it. I don't know if they still do. Urban was big on this, where
Eric is asking himself, who is Urban? Who is this Urban?
Urban Meyer, former Buckeye head coach.
No, so, but can he I tell would, you?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was going to tell a real quick story about the Urban Meyer thing. So a few years ago, there was a new restaurant in Dublin called the Pint House or Pint Room. and they called it the Urban Meyer Pite House. It's there now, but I didn't know who the guy was, and I thought it was going to be a hot dog place because I thought it was an Oscar Meyer Pite House. And I was like, why the?
Are you kidding? Are you a real person, Eric? Really?
It was really happened to me, and it was so embarrassing. I was like, when I finally found out, I'm like, oh, thank God,
this
it's
is
not
so
a hot
great.
Dog beer place. So, you know, it's pretty embarrassing, but yeah, well, that's how much I know about Ohio State football.
First of all, don't go Googling Urban Meyer Pint House right now, especially not involving hot dogs or grinders or anything. Oh. Just wait. There's a lot more going on with that. I'll let you figure that out. But you would be great for Ohio State used to have Real Life Wednesdays where it would be like they'd bring in like an accountant, right? Or someone who's done something in real life outside of football. Or it is sometimes a football star who's now like gone on to the NFL or someone who didn't make it. And they'll have them talk to the guys and be like, look, you're in this weird bubble right now. But after football at Ohio State, real life happens. And how are you going to handle all that? It would be great to bring you in and have you just stand up there and go, I know who none of you are and I don't care. Realize that like at some yes, right now it seems like you are the center of the universe, but you will get out of here. And some of you. Everyone will forget about you. People like me will have never known you. So what are you going to do with your life other than this? Because this is not important to every single person in the universe. You do have to like figure out other things. So I love that, though, Eric. That's good, man. I'm glad you know what you like and you stick to it. And that's good. And
well,
I appreciate
thank you.
That.
And I did tell. Oh, go ahead.
No, you're out.
I told Beam that if you guys didn't watch football, just imagine the hours and hours and hours of your life you would have back and how much time you could actually dedicate to watching the MLS Cup playoffs.
That's exactly right. That is true. Well, you have been dedicating your life to watching the playoffs. So we have the Eastern Conference Finals with Philly and NYCFC.
If you say so.
Yeah. So that's a bit shocking because New York City got in, they defeated New England and it went to penalties. I am floored that New England with all their momentum this year, how good they were playing all year. I'm floored that they didn't win this game. Explain to me what happened.
Yeah. For those who didn't watch it, this is one of probably the best games in the playoffs that have occurred. It was two great teams playing each other. Personally, New York City looks like the best team in the league right now, and my prediction is for them to win the MLS Cup in Yankee Stadium. But just their possession game is very good. New England was countering a lot in that game, but it did take it into extra time 1-1, and then in extra time there was two goals near the death. So they went into penalty kicks, and Sean Johnson came up with two stops to push New York City forward into the conference finals against the Duke of Philly, which should be an interesting matchup in yes. Chester, PA.
Yeah, that's one of those. I don't know which one MLS prefers. Do they prefer having like a dedicated stadium in Chester, Pennsylvania, under a bridge, or do they want to have? Hey, look, we're in the five boroughs in New York City, but we're at Yankee Stadium. Like, I don't know where they'd rather have MLS Cup be hosted, because it will probably be the Eastern Conference team hosting, right?
I believe so. I believe they had more points than Portland did. Portland, if they beat Real Salt Lake, which is the conference final, I believe it would still be hosted on the Eastern side, but I can't verify that for sure.
Hey, yeah. When you look at you know, this grand scheme of kind of upset that we saw this past weekend with the Revs going down, because Bone and I were talking about it, right? I mean, highest all-time points in an MLS season was amazing what they did in the regular season with the points they were able to accumulate. Where would you rank this on, like, the upset meter? Like, how surprised were you that this actually happened?
Yeah, something else we have to consider. It's been 24 days since New England played a game before that. So you could tell the rust because the early goal came, what, 2 or 3 minutes into that game? That's where I see the problem is MLS needs to fix how they schedule these games. They can't have that long of a break before the number one team plays against a solid New York City team. So personally, I think it was just the rust, and that's how New England failed to achieve that game.
That is a good point, but the other part of that that is really difficult is what do you do about that international break that FIFA's probably not ever going to move that, you know, because they had that issue before, right, where they would have the international break and, well, or most leagues would take it, but MLS would be like, no, we're going to plow through it. And it's like, okay, you might be missing some of your best players for these giant games. So now they've given this like huge, you know, 2 weeks off of the playoffs or whatever it is. And then, yeah, you're right. If you're the first, if you're like the number one seed, you're not sweating it. And it didn't work out really for either number one seed. Colorado, the number one seed in the West, they also lost to Portland. I didn't obviously watch that game. I don't know if they looked quite as rusty, but, you know, to clarify one quick thing, I did look up on the points. Portland, if it's New York and Portland would host, I believe, because they had 55 and New York had 51.
And that's the last thing any of us want, right?
Yeah, I don't need to see Portland hosting especially in a year where Caleb Porter's team didn't make the playoffs. Now I don't need to hear from the Portland fans. I don't need to be reminded of them winning on our field. So
are they the ones that saw the tree in the stands?
Yeah, that's who team. That's who we ripped the jackhammer off of, Beamer.
Be careful how you say that. Rip the jackhammer off of. Just be careful with your wording on
ripped
that.
Ripped off the jackhammer.
Mm-hmm.
Jack. Never mind. Let's just leave it there.
That's the phone. I am glad you did mention the other upset on the Western side with the Colorado-Portland game, which did occur on Thanksgiving Day and seemed to receive some of the highest ratings ever or viewerships ever for an MLS playoff game.
What were the numbers? Did you see those?
It was 7.2 million people watched that game, Bo. Or something in the area of above 7 million people.
Hang on. You're lying.
No, swear.
No.
Eric trolled us on Twitter the other day about it.
What?
Yeah.
The highest ever. I think it was any regular season game or playoff game.
Oh, it has. No, it's higher than anything outside of maybe Seattle doing something in the MLS Cup, I'm guessing. 7 million people watched that game?
Yeah, and I think my trolling was a lot of people took that remote control from Uncle Fred this Thanksgiving.
Oh, that's where, okay, yeah. Well, that's because we ripped Don Garber and said no one's going to be flipping off of that, and I guess I'm proven wrong.
I will say this about my family with what we did in Thanksgiving. So the Bears game was on before that. Eric, you have no clue what I'm talking about here. So just go into the ether sphere for a little
bit.
Yeah. So the Bears game was on, and then we had Thanksgiving dinner right as that game was finishing up around 3:30, 4 o'clock, and I just looked over when we were having dinner and the game was on. So I'm wondering if that happened in a lot of families as well. Keep the TV on and just get those TV numbers.
It's possible. That's how you get the numbers.
Yeah. Maybe that was it. I don't know. I guess it's, if you're going to get on Big Boy Fox, then that's something you can't turn down, I guess. If Fox is saying we will put you on regular TV, not on any FS1 or anything, that's something, but yeah, I'm still shocked by that. But hey, good for Portland. They got the victory. Now it's them and Real Salt Lake, another team that has ended a crew playoff run many moons ago that I don't have a lot of love for. But Eric, help me out a little bit because Nick Raimondo, no longer there, hasn't been there for a couple of years. He's old and retired. And is Kyle Beckerman a thing still, or he's retired too?
He's retired as well. I know it's been a while since Real Salt Lake has been any good.
Right, they've been bad.
And the other interesting thing is they have no owner right now. They lost their owner, and so it's potential that we could have a team that has no owner playing another team in a non-specific soccer stadium. So MLS Cup could be very interesting, but the whole Real Salt Lake story is pretty fun. They beat the first round, they had Seattle, and it was a 0-0 tie, went to penalty kicks, and they literally didn't put a shot on goal the entire game and somehow got through that round. And then they went to Kansas City. They actually looked really good against Kansas City, and Justin Merrim, former crew player, burnt Grand Zusi on the left side.
Were you living in 2012?
I know, right? Good for him.
Yes, he had a great move, and I think Zusi's a little old and couldn't keep up. And, yeah, that's how they won that game 2-1 and moving us into this final.
And I'll tell you what, if it means Justin Merrim is going to have a chance to win an MLS Cup, I would be rooting for that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
But also it means keeping Portland not happy. So, yeah, I'd be rooting for all that, too.
Yeah, and the big thing, even with the final here, is Asprilla and Blanco, their two strikers for Portland, are both out. Blanco got injured, and Asprilla has a yellow card accumulation, or red card accumulation.
That's setting up real nice for Real Salt Lake.
Yep, and then on the other side, New York City lost their Golden Boot winner, Castellanos.
Oh, okay,
so he is unavailable for the conference final as well. So both, I mean, from a non-MLS watcher, it's not going to be the funnest because all the strikers are out. But it, from the underdog story, it's there.
All right. So all right, you obviously, you love this. This is what you do. You watch so much MLS, you know, your head's basically exploding. All right. So give us a prediction here. I mean, these conference finals are this week. MLS Cup, what's it going to be? You already said New York City. You think they look like the best team. Who are they going to be facing from the West?
It has to be Real Salt Lake because mostly the underdog story's there, and they played well the last game. And I, you know how much I hate Steve Clark. I do not want that man in another MLS Cup final. And again, on the East with New York City, they look like quality, but if they're missing their striker, I could see Philly with the upset. So I'm predicting a Philly Real Salt Lake Cup final.
I like it a lot. That'll actually, you know what? I might tune into that. I might actually, I'll try to tune into both the conference finals.
Why don't you just go to our, come to our house and watch the game?
Well, yeah, let's do it.
Well, I would love to. This is the problem always is I have three children that get left with my wife at all times whenever I'm like, hey
man,
I'm
we
go
didn't
do a fun
control
thing.
That. We didn't control
that. No, I know that,
fault.
But now I'm in it. And so then I can't be like, always, hey, got to leave you with everybody. See you later. So. Yeah, but if I can swing it, I'd like to come over. That would be fun. Maybe for MLS Cup, if nothing else. But I do have a couple names real quick, Eric, before we go, that I want to run by you. Crew players. I just want an impression from you. Like, what do you remember of – I'm going to give you three names, okay? Former crew players. And, Beamer, if you want to add anything, because I know you're a longtime crew fan as well, go right ahead. Number one is Emilio Renteria. Your thoughts on Emilio Renteria?
Renteria, my favorite part of Renteria, he was this bull player, but the goal celebration, I was sitting in the Nordic to one game, and I remember this so distinctly. He ran to the corner, took his shoe off, and then made it look like he was talking on a cell phone while we're all cheering after he scored a goal and, like, hung it up on the flag after he was done. It was amazing. Yeah,
which was a great celebration. And then it's like afterwards he has to run, like he has to like, yeah, that's right, I did that. Yeah. And then he like runs away and it's like someone has to get your shoe. And now you have to put it back on. There is a moment where you do have to like end the celebration and go back to real life. Okay, so there's Emilio Renteria. I'll give you another. I'm just trying to think of
random.
He was so good. Let's go with Emmanuel Ekpo. Your thoughts on Emmanuel Ekpo?
Ekpo, he played like in 2005 and 6 or something, right?
He was there the 08 team. He was a role player.
Yeah.
Come in. Yeah, but he was brought in and there were like high hopes for him. A midfielder who just kind of never fully put it all together.
Because then we had Carroll as our defensive mid and he wasn't losing that job. And then as our attack, we had a Rourke that was a utility player as well. Who else was in the midfield in that 2018? Was it?
Oh, you had. Why am I blanking? Obviously, Eddie Gavin was there, and but who was Brad who played for Seattle? Why am I blanking on his last name?
Evans.
Yeah, Brad Evans. God, I don't know why I was blanking on that.
Welcome to the expansion draft.
Yes, which was horrible because he was such a good player,
he was.
Yeah,
I remember being mad at Seattle just because they took that player.
Absolutely, that's right.
Yeah, and that was the year Siggy left, and then Siggy took one of our best players.
That 2008, end of 2008, that was just, it sucks how MLS does that. All right, so then third player, I'm only doing this because I have a feeling that a certain Morgan Hughes might listen to this podcast, and I want to know your thoughts on his favorite player, Andres Mendoza.
Mendoza, was he our second DP? So I think what I remember him is Galota was this amazing Argentine that was a legendary player, and he came and won us an MLS Cup, and we're like, awesome. DPs are the way to go in MLS. And then Andre Mendoza comes to town, and all these expectations. And I remember the one game I saw a cross right to him. He was wide open in the box, a header, and completely missed it off target. And he just put his head down, and he was, such a disappointment. And from what I recall is when he did leave, he ended up with some drug issues and
life went off the rails with that dude. But Beamer, just so you know, this guy, when he came in 2000 to 2004, this guy played for Club Bruges.
Oh, okay.
129 appearances, 54 goals.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And then he played for Marseille. He played for Dynamo Moscow.
Like, did he play for Lyle ever, or did he not make that trip?
No Lyle that I can see. Okay. Peruvian striker that we all thought, okay, he's going to come in here and just be sick. And you're right. He lasted 2 years, Eric, and was just – he had a couple moments. He had one at the top of the box I will never forget where, like, he had his back to goal. He received a pass, and he just, like, turned – fired it far post, and it was like, I mean, it was a worm burner. It was going a million miles an hour, and it was like, this guy, there we go, he's gonna do it. And then it was like, we got maybe a few more of those that were ever as good as that goal.
I'm pretty sure he made like four penalty kicks and like one goal out of the penalty kick. So he was such a disappointment.
Andres Mendoza. I still have my hopes he can turn it around.
I didn't know any of these guys you're talking about, but I enjoyed the hell out of just listening to you two recant tales.
This is just a little, test of Eric's knowledge. And we didn't even go super deep. I was thinking about throwing a Jacob Thomas at you, but I thought that's a deeper cut there. That would have been like 2003, 2004, around that era, I think. 2005. And he was like a bald white dude who kind of was fast at the time, who was not in any real way. But for us, our teams were so bad on some of those teams. We were just like, he's all right. He could cut it. And he was like a winger who, anyway. All right, there we go. Well, I hope that your prediction comes true for MLS Cup. And I look forward to watching these games now that we have some more info. Thank you, Eric. That was great.
Absolutely, and thank you for having me on the show.
All right, so before we get you out of here too, I mean, you know, this is, we're giving you the platform, right, to talk about whatever you want. I mean, you're a diehard Crew fan. First, who is your favorite Crew player? Because we just threw Morgan Hughes under the bus. Who's your favorite Crew player, Eric? Why? And what do you expect in this offseason out of your guys? Are you on fire, Caleb, or are you team retain Caleb?
So you're saying favorite Crew player currently? Like that's
no,
on the
no, just
right
ever,
now?
Ever.
Oh, Scalotto, of course. He's the legend. He's the best. To watch him play, that's, I think, what got me into the Crew. I remember I went to a game in, when did he come, 2006 or 2007? One of those games.
It was 2007, I believe. Yeah,
I believe you're right. Sure. And I think I was at a Chicago game, and I was sitting right behind the goal, and he just – made this amazing free kick and scored a goal. And just watching it, I got hooked on to what he could do. And then if you follow that 2008 season, you'd be a Scalotto fan too. We couldn't lose when we were at home, and the Nordic was formed. And it was just so much energy that year. And I'll never forget that 2008 team, as well as Scalotto being what he was.
I will never forget seeing him the first time, Eric, and thinking like, this guy is tiny and he has a haircut from 1984. And he looks like he was 35 years old, and he looked like he was 50 at times.
Yeah.
It's like, how is this guy going to like destroy this league? And then he did. And then I never doubted him the rest. Like after the first couple times watching him, I was like, I will never doubt this man. He's great.
His haircut was something else as well. You're right. Then what was the next question, Brandon? I'm sorry.
I was going to say off-season expectations. What do you want to see out of the team? And are you on fire, Caleb, or retain Caleb?
I feel like we have to give him another year. He did win us a MLS Cup. He had some issues this year, and if you look at his history of coaching, he actually did that every other coaching option he had. He would make the playoffs and win the cup, and then he didn't make the playoff the next year. So I have faith that he can still do the team good next year. My expectations for next year, I saw they just came out with who they are letting go and out of contract. And I know we have a core that's still good. We have Nagby and Mensah and Zellerion, and they should help start a rebuild this year. But I think the wing play is where we're going to have to see the changes. Is Etienne Jr. still going to be productive? Is Diaz going to be productive? So I still think it's pretty unpredictable at now, but hopefully this offseason we get some players.
Yeah, I agree with you that they've got to look at – I think they're you're going to see different formation this year. I think they're going to have to do some things to keep – because I don't think it makes sense to have Barry and Giassi Zardes fighting it out for one spot. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I think you could see them go in a very different direction from a formation standpoint, and then that means where do you put Zellerion and what do you start to do there with some of these different wingers? But – yeah, they did exercise the options on quite a few players this year. I was trying to pull up the list so we could go over it real quick if you want to. And I don't know why I can't find it now.
Internet. Oh, it's tough.
Thank you. I got it. All right. Well, here are the guys who are currently on the roster. Defenders are Abubakar Keita, Mensah, Josh Williams, and Steven Moreira, who I really liked when he came into play. He was great this year. I think he's going to be a stud. Midfielders, Artur, Luis Diaz, Derek Etienne Jr., Marlon Hairston, Perry Kitchen, Matan, Molino, ouchie, Aiden Morris, hope he's not ouchie, Darlington Nagby, Isaiah Parenti, Lucas Zellerion, and Sebastian Berhalter back to the fold. We could have used him last year.
Oh, yeah.
Too bad Austin got to have him. And then Miguel Berry and Josy Zardes are your forwards, so... yeah, there's quite a few guys who are on the way out. Like Vito Wormhoor is gone. Bradley Ray Phillips got declined. Waylon Francis. And also, pour one out because Eric Dick and Evan Bush both not retained at goalkeeper. So we lost Dick and Bush in one day.
Damn, that's a tough scene.
And Room is still in negotiations as well. So yeah, we might not even have a goalkeeper yet.
That's right, yeah. There was that Instagram post from his wife, right, a couple days ago that was like, back in Europe, fun things ahead, can't talk
yet. Hey, our guy like, Patrick Murphy confirmed that he would be back with the crew. Though.
Okay, okay, that's good.
And if he's wrong, yell at him and not us.
That's right. I guess the last thing I'll ask you about, because I forgot, yes, we couldn't just talk about this now, but Harrison Offal, not currently under contract, do you think he'll be brought back?
I don't think he'll be brought back. I think, like you said, Marin, what is the name again?
Moreira.
He's such quality. He's going to overtake that position. But still, we need some kind of depth. But I think Offal is now 37. He's one of the greatest defenders we've had, but yeah, his time is up, and I'm not sure if another team will take him. I think he might be close to retirement.
Yeah, I also think that Steven Moreira may be that he is quality, but I also think because we've spent so much time kind of watching Harry kind of fall into a little bit more of a lull and maybe the tail end of his career, like, now it's anybody by comparison, you're like, wow, they look awesome, you know, and it's
you're right, but
I think Moreira is a really good option, so yeah, we'll see about what they do about depth, but yeah, gonna be a fun off season. Well, do you have anything else that you want to ask Beamer before we get out of here?
No, I don't. I'm good. I mean, I see Eric every day, so I don't need to ask. I don't need to ask him anything else.
There you go. Well, Eric,
it
happy holidays.
Now. We don't. Oh, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say happy holidays to you and yours. And
put your Christmas lights up, too. Stop slacking. We're really outshining you in that department.
Beamer has so much Christmas stuff on his house. He does make us look pretty sad and pitiful. So, yes, we will get on that, Beamer. Thank you.
Yeah, get there. You got to do that, Eric. All right. Well, that's it for us. Thanks to Eric for coming on. We will see you guys next week right here on Bone and Beam United.